5 pounds. She was round in the places she was supposed to be round. Now you can take the waitress or the blonde over there, but stand back, Toby. That's a size I wear.
Roger Clemens, everybody. I didn't know.
You didn't know I fly by DJ No Request at night, did you?
Is it like, where do you normally do your performances?
So
weddings?
Long story longer. I don't know. 15 years ago, I gutted a little side garage I had at the house in Texas, and I made it into a music room. So all the guys that came in for the rodeo, the performers, we'd get them after they'd perform, come to the house and do a little singing and carrying on. And I always made them leave something, their hat, their guitar, or something they had to leave. It's like winning the Masters when you have to leave you have to send them or leave them a pitching wedge or some type of iron or wood or putters. I know you guys said you guys visit with Ben Crenshaw, so I'm sure Ben sent something other than his prized possession putter. But anyway, so.
Small price to pay.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
They don't have that in baseball.
No, but, you know, relative to that, when you're pitching in the World Series, All-Star Game, when I was going for my 300th win, Major League Baseball had people right on top of you. And, like, they were taking balls out of play and putting the hologram on them. And then so they knew exactly what that ball was from or which strikeout it was or – obviously my 300 win. What was cool, I think I signed them a couple, two or three dozen baseballs from the game, but they marked and gave me a dozen to hand out to my friends from the 300 win game.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so 20 strikeout, you know, when you do a little milestone, like they took my glove and my cleats. And yeah, really cool stuff. But so the music thing, I'll get back on, I'll tell you that. It was a longer story. But so I get this room and I tell everybody, karaoke sucks. There's nothing worse than a dude. Even if he can sing, you know, Endless Love or Purple Rain, it's brutal. So there's this program called K-Jams. My oldest sister is pretty techie, and I'm pretty tech savvy, too. So we had fun with this K-Jams program, and it's awesome because what's cool about it is, depending on if it's Toby Keith singing behind me or Beyonce, one of the girls or whatever, I have the performer singing behind you, so I tee you up over them. So this is like your background singer. So I tell people you can be good, drunk, bad, or indifferent. You're going to sound great. And it encourages everybody to come up and sing. It caught fire. Had a party one time, like I said, a few years ago at the house. Got a really fun oil field guy, and it's in the oil field business, and does a lot for my foundation and a lot for a lot of people's foundation. Season ticket holder for the Astros. His name's Jim West. We call him Wild Wild Jim West. Well, we had about 20 in the music room. He's like, and his go-to song is Play That Funky Music, White Boy, and Boogie Shoes. And so he wanted me to play it because it's a good crowd, and he wants to get up here and shake it and show off. And he's good. He doesn't even need the words. And I don't play it for 20 minutes because I've got my songs teed up, ready to go to keep the crowd moving. And he comes leaning back over to me after maybe a little glass of whiskey or something. Goes, Rock, you gonna play my song or not? I want to get up here and do it. I said, I got you. Just relax. And another 20 minutes go by, and I didn't play it. And all of a sudden, my equipment shuts down. He's standing with the microphone in my music room. He goes, okay, I want everybody in this room to know that his nickname is no longer The Rocket anymore. His new nickname is DJ Bleep Bleep No Request because he doesn't play anything. He doesn't play anything anyone. So it stuck. I got banners. Fast forward 10 years later, we just did two shows in Times Square for Christmas parties. Did one at Jack and Barbara Nicholas's fundraiser in Virginia. And so now it's just taking off, man. I throw that music on there. My goal is to get everybody up out of their seats dancing, and it's a good way to kill a couple, 2 or 3 hours.
It's an art form, though. Like it really it is. Hey, let me flip this around for you. Hold
there
it,
you
guys.
Go. There you go.
It's an art form, though, right? I mean, you can't just – you got to think about – what music they want to hear, right?
It is. You've got the main songs that everybody knows the words to, and you got to know the age of your crowd. If I'm doing this for my younger boys, I've got to put a little hip hop in there too,
right?
And it's crazy because they know the words and I don't, and and they're on top of it. So you got to know your group. You got to play it, and then the songs they get on me because one of the songs I love and I play it all the time, and I'm trying to show my soft side is. Dancing Queen.
Ooh, that's
ABBA. So I play that normally. Before the night end, it has to be played. And, of course, I get on the mic and say, couple skate only. Please clear the rink. Couple skate only. And then we go to – I got to go with Elvis. Elvis is my guy.
For sure.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if skinny Elvis or fat Elvis. I love him, both of them.
You got a couple go-tos for the listeners?
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch on Elvis. I play him sometimes two songs in a row before the night ends. And then my song to hint to people to get the hell out of the house and go home is Closing Time.
Oh, that's a good one.
You ain't got to go home. But
what
you
is that,
get
a Third Eye Blind?
There you go. Look,
that's
at you.
A great
I
band.
Need to, you might need to come sit in with me.
Dude, I'm a big music fan.
I love that. I love that. Me too. I love music. What was cool, usually during the season, the starting pitcher on the road or at home is, kind of allowed to tee up his music in the clubhouse that day to listen to a couple hours before the game. So just depends on what you like. So on my playlist, I had to have everything from rock and roll to classic rock,
right,
to top 40 to country, obviously country.
Love and, favorite country singer, anyone?
Well, Toby Keith's a good friend. Solid. So Tobe's my guy, and
he's a golfer, right?
Huh?
He plays a little bit.
Absolutely, he has his own golf course called Belmar.
There you go.
There's only one week a year we don't talk, and it's Texas OU, the Red River. So we lose each other's number that week, and we try not to talk to each other. But he's the happiest man on the planet now because I almost had him rooting for my two boys at Texas when they would play Oklahoma. Oh. And he said that finally last year, and he knew Cody was my youngest one was going to graduate. He finally looked at me and said, "Rock, would you hurry up and graduate these Clemson boys so I can go to Hayton, Texas again?" So, yeah, Tobe's awesome. He's old school. When he does these shows, tribute shows to like Merle Haggard and guys, stuff like that, it's so fun to watch him. He's so crafty in what he does, and he loves baseball. He's a huge Dodger fan.
Yeah,
huge Dodger fan. I know if the Dodgers are playing out west, and he's in Oklahoma, he's up past midnight watching these guys play. He loves Dodger blue.
What I guess I'm curious to know. You love music. Did that ever work its way into your pregame or postgame, or while you were
It did. I love music. I just think it's a way to bring people together. I've been fortunate in my career playing 24 years. I've met some really cool people through the game of baseball and golf, being at the golf tournament here. I know most of these guys. I played with them like at the AT&T back then, or the Bob Hope. I played in the Bob Hope probably 20 years.
Wow.
So I've met these guys, and so I love it. I love to watch these guys do their work. I still work with probably 20 pitchers in the big leagues. We'll call or text or go golf with them. And when they ask me a pointed question, I try and give them a pointed answer. And, like I said, with mainly the mental part of the game, I was always big mentally. Mentally, my deal was to just absolutely crush you mentally. I had to be focused for me and focused on the guy that I'm trying to attack at the plate. And I tell people that's who I was on the mound. When you see me on the mound, when you talk about being intimidating, what was really cool, I was with Jack and we were fielding questions and like – three or four of the first 10 questions about being intimidating Jack on the golf course and intimidating this and you're intimidating on the mound. And it was funny because he leaned over and said, "You know what intimidating is?" And I knew exactly where he's going. And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "You win." I goes, "You're not too intimidating when you lose. You're intimidating when you lose." And I said, "You're right." I said, "We got guys that throw 100 miles an hour and have no clue. They're power throwers. They have no clue what they're doing out there." That's where I was fortunate through my career. I was a power pitcher, so when I didn't have my 96, 97 miles an hour, my arm was lagging or dragging, whatever you want to call it, and I was sitting at 91, 92, I pitched. But I learned that in high school. I didn't throw very hard in high school. I matured late. I graduated when I was 17. And my high school coach was like my father figure. My father passed away when I was 9, so I was raised by very strong-willed women, my mother, my grandmother. But my high school coach, he wasn't just a coach, he was a better teacher of the game. And I had a pretty good curveball, so when the two older guys came in throwing gas and then they wet the bed, coach would bring me in and I'd just throw strikes and throw my little Bugs Bunny curveball over. So that's kind of how it all started for me. I was probably a better defensive end than I was a pitcher first baseman back then. But it was pretty cool once I realized I was going to be able to go to the University of Texas, and they're going to pay for my education because that would have been the only way I could have went to school because, we didn't have, mom was working three jobs. We didn't have the money to do that. So
wow.
I was fortunate.
I got to tell you, this is like a moment for me, man. Like, because I was born in 81. I watched a ton of baseball when I was young. I was an 86 Mets fan. I'm sorry, you know, but
yeah.
But that was a team, you know, and I think a lot of, like, everything you're saying, it's just reminding me of all those wonderful times as a kid growing up watching it and watching you.
Yeah.
And basically, through the television, being scared of you. Do people say that to you?
I don't know. I was just really focused, man. I mean, when I think it's just, again, the way I was brought up. I watched how hard my mom worked, and I knew it was my job. Even though it's a game, it was my job. I don't know that I really treated it like a job. I think my first couple years, I was like, man, you know, if I do this right, I can, you know, really take care of my mom and my family, my extended family. And then after about the second year, I was like, okay, I got this. And now it's about winning championships and winning. And I loved history. Even though when I got drafted by the Red Sox out of Texas, the Astros and the Rangers were following us real close at Texas. And so when the Red Sox drafted me, I was like, where am I going? You know, I didn't look like Boston. But my mom was great. She always was into history, and she wrote me a poem about Fenway Park in Boston. And the cool little story about it was funny for me was that when I got called up to Fenway Park, I don't think it was cell phones. This was 84 or whatever. And taxi brought me from Logan Airport to Fenway, and I had my head in a paper or something. He stopped and he goes, here you go, kid, get out. And I looked out the window, and it was a brick building, and it looked like a warehouse. And I said, man, I'm a professional ball player. I'm going to Fenway. It's a place called Fenway Park. He goes, this is it, kid, get your butt out of my cab. And I got out and I saw the lights, and then I walked in and saw the big green monster and everything. So, and then fast forward to now, like, it's cool for me because my boys or their friends, if they're at the house, and an old black and white film of Lou Gehrig, you know, giving a speech, the boys are like, Dad, you spent 7-8 years right there where Lou Gehrig stood to give his. I go, yes, yeah, you know, it was awesome, you know, old Yankee Stadium. And the same thing with Fenway when they, you know, having my numbers equal to a Cy Young, who I was fortunate to win his award 7 times with, but you see Ted Williams or Yaz running around the bases. So that was all cool stuff. So. And then, like you said, 86, I mean, I played in 6 World Series. There were 2 of the losses were super emotional. 86 was like, man, your emotions were up, down. And to look at the World Series, to see how we got there, you have to go back a week earlier when we played the California Angels. Because what happened to us with the one strike away with the Mets, the Angels, I mean, as I'm telling you the story, I can look across the field and see Reggie Jackson with his arm on Gene Mauch, and with one more strike, we're going home. And Dave Henderson hits that big home run, and now my mind's going from I'm going to pack, and then I'm going to be in Houston, Texas in 3 days, pack my house up in Boston, be in Houston in 3 days, to I might be pitching game 7 now to get us to the World Series. And then that's what happened. Then you get to the World Series, and I'm standing there after pitching game 6. We got a lead. One of my former Texas teammates on the mound, Calvin Schiraldi, he's out there trying to mow these guys down because he was with the Mets at one time and got traded over to us. We actually had 3 of us from Austin, from the University. Spike Owen was with us. So they were calling us the Austin Red Sox. And so it was so cool. And then first time I've ever seen a World Championship trophy, I actually went in to always let my facial hair grow in between starts to honor my dad that passed away, because he used to tickle me with his whiskers, tickle my belly, and we watched Bonanza, you know, and he'd come home, and so I'd always not shave in between starts. So after I got done pitching, when I went into ice, I'd shave real quick and get back to the dugout. Well, I went back to the dugout, but when I went in to shave and ice my arm, you know, we had a lead, and they were already setting up the platform in the visiting clubhouse there at Shea. And you know, Mrs. Yawkey was, I should know her age, but I'm guessing she was probably close to 80. They had to start walking her down because, you know, she sort of get her down by the clubhouse. And they had the plastic in front of the lockers and the champagne ready to go. And I'm like, man, you know, and I wasn't real superstitious, you know, back then, but I became superstitious after that. But and then when the Mets tied the game up, I've never seen a clubhouse. They rushed her out, like Bob Costas and the people that were going to be on the, you know, platform. They broke that platform down. They took all the plastic off the lockers and got it out of there. And then we ended up having a rain out and then playing game 7, which we're in. But it was a fantastic series. The other one, of course, was 2001. You know, I was a Yankee. I tell people, they asked me actually here at this event that we're at about special moments. And I talked about it. It's the coolest thing. I mean, from what happened as a tragedy, I was supposed to pitch tonight at 9/11. I was a New York Yankee, right, and that was my game to pitch against the Red Sox. I was going for my 20th win, which is a milestone for a starting pitcher. And was in New York City. We had a bunch of people, friends, up to watch me try and go after my 20th. And like I said, it was against the Red Sox, so Yankee-Red Sox rivalry thing was cool. And then all hell broke loose in the city. But what came of it was my agents went to high school with General Myers, our four-star general, and Richard Myers, just unbelievable man. He called them and said, would I go to the Middle East to see our troops? And so we brought along, asked Drew Carey, comedian Drew came. He was so fun to have around. He was telling jokes. But I think in 6-7 days, we saw, I don't know, probably 15,000 of our men and women young. I couldn't believe how young they were, but we hit that ground running, and you know, the Pentagon had printed up like 1,000 baseballs and like a bunch of photos. So I was signing them on the way over there to hand out and throw out. Brought baseball gloves to play catch with everybody, but it was the coolest experience that I've ever had. Just talking to our men and women, how excited they were to be over there protecting us and do whatever's needed. And to make sure that I would tell, you know, I met season ticket holders from the Red Sox, from the Yankees, from the Blue Jays, from the Astros, Longhorn fans, Aggie fans. Everybody was telling me, you know, who they're kind of rooting for. But it was an unbelievable trip. They gave us a little military booklet, and I think after the sixth day, we were off of it maybe 4 or 5 minutes tops. But that's why I tip my hat every time I do these, and whether it's Jack's event or any of these events, I tell the story that I had my oldest brother served, and he's since passed, but he served at Vietnam. I had 5 or 6 uncles that served in the military, so I tip my hat. I tell people, 24 years, I consider myself a huge team player. These men and women are the ultimate team players for us.
Yeah, I agree. We've done a lot of stuff, you know, using the armed forces, men and women, in golf as well, you know, and like kind of looking at how that can help, you know, soldiers coming back, Marines coming back, you know, as a way to socialize. Because like you said, it is a team sport. And then when you come back, you can find yourself isolated. And golf kind of offers that outlet, we found.
I agree. We do some events. Folds of Honor is one there in Tulsa. Major Dan Rooney does a fantastic job with that. And then we've done Helping Heroes. I've had my foundation, the Roger Clemens Foundation, since 91, and we help at-risk kids. We've gone outside the box. We had a family lost a dad and couldn't afford to bury him. So, I mean, we've done different things, but mainly we deal with at-risk kids. But when I am able to donate time or go out and play in a golf event that's going to help build a soldier a home and make that home wheelchair accessible or whatever it might be. I mean, it's just a total different type of stress that you have. I tell people that, you know, it's fun for me to explain the game of baseball a little more in detail than just sitting in the stands and having your popcorn and beer, what's going on the field. There's all kinds of stuff. I called 90%, 95% of my game from the mound with my looks. I've got to listen to each dugout to make sure guys aren't doing things. There's all kinds of things going on. And I took it very seriously. I got paid very well to do what I did. And I took it very seriously. You know, again, to know what our men and women, our soldiers do for us, man, it's crazy good. And you just have so much respect.
Yeah, I agree. Let's go to a quick break and we'll come back and get into some golf here.
All right, Precision Pro, everybody. Precision Pro Golf makes amazing golf rangefinders that are the perfect combination of price and performance. Listen, whenever I see someone on the range or wherever I go, if I see someone with a Precision Pro rangefinder, I see a paisano, a countryman, someone who's not interested in basically overpaying for a product. Same way I feel about Vice Balls, you know? It's just like... We cut out the middleman, we make a great product, and we get it out to you so that you can basically afford it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I would rather have something that's good value, right? Right now, the NX7 Pro is on sale. Whoa, $40 off. Go get it. $40 off, that's a good deal. What's even better is that you can get an additional $10 off for being a listener of the podcast when you use the promo code ERIC at checkout. That's $50 off. I mean, jeez, I'm going to go get some. I've said that already. Over 800 verified reviews from real golfers can't be wrong. Here's what Ty had to say about his NX7 Pro rangefinder. He goes, while waiting on the tee box in my last round, there was a hawk flying overhead. The NX7 Pro is so fast and accurate that I was able to measure the distance to the hawk while it was moving. 178.4 yards, if you're curious. So that's about that's an easy six, hard seven. If the NX7 Pro golf rangefinder can measure a hawk, it can definitely measure a flag. That's been my experience. Well, also Ty's experience. Go to precisionprogolf.com and use coupon code ERIC, E-R-I-K, to get $50 off the NX7 Pro rangefinder today. Swing with confidence, hit more greens with Precision Pro Golf. All right, one more read, folks. Adidas. Over 5 million pieces of plastic are floating in our oceans, which over time get broken down, making it easy for sea life to ingest, ultimately affecting our own food chain. So it is your problem. It's not just a world problem. It's you. It affects you. Adidas is working with Parley to prevent plastic entering our oceans and transform it into high-performance sportswear. Shoes is coming soon. Just hold on. Hold your hats, folks. I'm not even done with the ad. Stop trying to figure out what I'm going to say. Adidas is spinning the problem into what? A solution. The thread into a thread. I don't know what that means. It's written here. It says the thread into a thread. I don't know who wrote this. Adidas Golf is bringing eco-innovation to the golf course in the form of a special edition shoe. All right, this is legit, actually. This is the first time the Parley shoe has been a golf shoe. I've had it in form of a running shoe. I mean, look, it's a sick shoe that serves a purpose, okay? That's where you get it. The Tour 360 XT Parley, the first ever golf shoe. Oh, look, they already wrote it for me. The first ever golf shoe made from recycled. Oh, no, it's not called recycled. It's called upcycled. I don't know what that is. I feel like I should probably Google that. Upcycled plastic waste that was intercepted like Jason Bourne from the beaches and coastal communities before reaching the ocean. Dang, I didn't realize this is Jason Bourne's golf shoe. Intercepted. I mean, I'm a golf guy, but I also love football. Who doesn't love a classic interception, especially when it's Jason Bourne saving planet Earth? Entire upper of the shoe is made with threads spun. It's also a DJ. Amazing. From the upcycled plastic waste. My phone's ringing. It's Andrew Marler. Hang on. All right, well, that was a 20-minute phone call, but you have no idea. It just went by like that. Anyway, the Tour 360 XT Parley, the first ever golf shoe made from upcycled plastic. I already read this because it's got the intercepted line. Intercepted from beaches and coastal communities in a world before reaching the ocean. The entire upper of the shoe is made from thread spun from upcycled plastic waste. Built as the Tour 360 XT, you still get great traction and stability. I feel like, what's that line from Taken? I have a certain set of skills. They will take you. Available starting June 10th at adidas.com, and for those headed to the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, a select number of pairs will be sold on site. Get into it, folks. All right, back to the show.
So, you know, you see a lot of people come to golf, right? Athletes, right? Professional athletes, top of their field, they come to golf, and what's that experience like? I don't know. I mean, I could only imagine. You've mastered one craft, and now you're going to pick up a club. What was that like?
Yeah, great question. So it's fun for me, even when I was what I considered a hack. I'm about a 5 handicap now, but I used to hit. When I first started playing, I had the McGregor Woods. I kept my first set of clubs during my office, and you know, I had a 20 yard banana. I would go to the right side of the tee box and hit a 20 yard banana to get it back in play. That's just all I knew, And I really only had two lessons, but I learned by playing next to the Billy Andrades and the Davis Loves and the Brad Faxtons. These guys had me out. I mean, I still remember I had been playing maybe 6 months, and I don't know how many rounds that is, but I was playing. I get a phone call from Billy Andrade, and he says, I want you to go be my partner at AT&T Pebble Beach. I start laughing. I go, that sounds fun, Pebble Beach. It's awesome. He goes, what's your handicap? I go, I don't have a handicap. He goes, but if you had to guess, I said 22, 24. He goes, no, you're not. I go, Billy, I'm like a 22 handicap. You've seen me. I hit my big banana and stuff. He goes, we'll work on that, but you're an 18.
Yeah, that's the max, right?
You're dead on. So you can't be more than that. I said, okay, I'm an 18, but I'm not. And I tell you what, I had pneumonia after four rounds out there trying to keep my ball. And I didn't realize there was going to be five people deep on some of the fairways on each side, right where I'm in. They're all leaning in with their head. And I go, people, come on.
Yeah.
I said, I'm fixing to just absolutely, you're going to have Titleist on your forehead here in a minute, you know, or something.
Did you ever yell wild pitch?
Well, you have to hit your foul balls there, don't you? No, man, I was nervous because, like, I whistled one right over top of the crowd. And, you know, there's some fans out there, and one of them's like, hollers, yeah, Rocket, I hope you got your insurance paid up. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. If I smoke somebody out here, it's my fault.
It's not
I got to pay for their teeth.
No.
Yeah, but
they bought a ticket.
Yeah, exactly.
They went for the ride.
Yeah, now we know that for sure. But like 86, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And so, but to your point is, it was great. I loved playing like in January, throughout January, before I went to spring training in February, because once I did get a little clue on how to hit the golf ball, it really helped me focus. Because like you said, we're out of our element. You know, but I'm watching these guys. I was always very visual person. I would look at, you know, photos of Tom Seaver or Nolan Ryan back then. We didn't have all the big video back 84, 85, 86. So I was watching these guys, you know, there's still shots of how they're using their lower half. And so the same thing, when I'm standing right next to a dude that's, you know, playing for money, and I'm in his office, and I get to watch these guys work and how they break down the golf course. We're not just launching it. And it never makes sense. It still doesn't make sense to me that if you swing easier, it goes 10 yards farther.
No.
Doesn't make sense. So
I can't figure that one.
Can't figure it out.
You talked about Nolan Ryan. Did you ever mess with Tom House?
I didn't. I met Tom House a few times.
He's a legend.
Yeah, he does. Again, some of his theories work for me. Some of them don't.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing when I teach a 7-year-old or a college dude, or the talk or the mental part of the game. Like I said, physically, you got to be there. Mentally, you got to be over the top. You got to be locked in. And then your last thing that you have to deal with in sports, really for me, is your emotions. And you have to try and keep those and channel them in a great way. And, you know, 24 years, I tell people, I showed my backside a handful of times. But you know what? I care. I care about it, and I really care about it. And so, you know, I'd have to call home a few times. Mom would say, son, can you put your glove up in front of you? You know, that's when all this started. You know, everybody's doing this.
Yeah.
I said, no, Mom, I was saying vacuum. That's what
vacuum.
I was saying.
Fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
so
great.
But I had fun with it, and like I said, that's I tell people that's what I did. It's not who I am as a person, but when I'm representing your city or I'm representing you when I'm doing something, I take it extremely serious, and I'm going to make sure whether even when I retired and unretired those three times, whatever it was, if somebody like a Brian Cashman of the Yankees didn't call me, I was in my garage the last time he called, and I was like, there's no way. He goes, how long would it take you to get ready? I go, are you kidding me? He goes, no, I need you in my fourth or fifth slot, but I need you in the clubhouse, too, to keep everybody and get everybody on the same page so we can make it
run.
So if it wasn't, he goes,
you were like kind of like an interior mental coach.
Yeah, I was like 45 years old, too. I was like,
that's
man,
awesome.
I run a – we have a place at Memorial Park at home that, you know, it's a 3-mile track. I walk, jog it a lot. But it's nowhere near that to find out if I'm going to be able to pitch a major league season again. So that was stressful, and it was fun. It was fun getting back and seeing the guys and getting in the mix. But a lot of people I respect in the game there.
Do you have any like regrets from your career or anything that you wanted to happen that didn't?
No, I don't. Like I said, I think I'd have been doing something. If I didn't play ball, I would have been doing something with history. I love history, and through that game and really golf. I mean, come on. I got to be really close with the Bush family at home. I mean, they lived a couple, especially Gampy. We call him Gampy Senior Bush, 41. You know, staying with him at Kenny Bunkport and trying, you know, I was always trying to get one of his golf clubs, and I tried a bit on, I was a big JFK fan too. And being in Boston, I got to meet a lot of the Kennedys. And actually, Deb, my wife's really still friends with some of the Kennedys. And it was just cool to just see it, to see the history. I have little pieces of history throughout the house that I've collected. I really didn't collect autographs unless another guy would ask me to sign stuff for them personally or for their foundation or their golfing event. And then once they opened the door, I'd say, okay, I need four things. You got to send, because I collected them for my four boys, really. I wanted them to have it for their house. So it was real cool. Emmett would say, hey, send me a jersey. And I say, hey, dude, can you send me four footballs? So he signed up four footballs. Or one night when Larry Bird retired, the club, he put a silver 33 on my hat. And somebody from Larry Bird's office, or somebody, it might have been Larry, somebody called our clubhouse before the game was over. What happened was our clubhouse guy put a silver 33 to honor him. I was starting that night at Fenway, and I think I struck out the side or something. The opposing manager said it was distracting. I had to take it off.
No.
So when I took it off, they called, and I think Larry wanted it for his bar in French Lick, Indiana. And it was really cool because he sent me back a couple basketballs. So, and that was fun for me being in Boston at that time too. I mean, not only were we getting after it,
yeah,
but you know, I'm watching Michael, Magic, and Larry get after it in the Garden.
So what a cool city!
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
You you talked about your kids a lot. I mean, they're in sports.
Yeah.
At what point do they realize who Roger Clemens is versus who their dad is?
Yeah, I think they say it perfect. There's a couple sayings. Some of them almost make sense, some don't. But, like, I tell people that if you didn't know they were my boys, you wouldn't know it. They don't introduce themselves like they're my sons or walk around like that. And again, it's just their upbringing. In the same way I was brought up by my mom and my grandmother. They wear the name loud and proud. I teach them to be as tenacious as possible when they're on the playing field. I mean, my youngest one, Cody, I remember when he was like 5, 6 years old, I got him YMCA ball, and we're out there playing. They go up and down the court 2 or 3 times. He makes a couple, like 3 baskets in a row. And I take my eye off him. The coach is screaming at me saying, hey, Rock, your kid just walked out the door. He left. He walked off the court and went through the double door. He's like 6. I go chase him down. He's in the parking lot standing by the car. I go, what are you doing, Code? And he goes, I'm not playing in this league, Dad. And I go, what's the problem? He goes, they don't keep score. he didn't want to play because they didn't keep score. He said, what's the point, you know? So
right.
But all the boys that played you know, sports, that's the way, you know, you bring them up. I want to be the sweetheart off the field, and be as tenacious as they need to be on the field, and play it well and play it the right way. But I think they handle it well. I think, you know, like I said, that, you know, you'll have it some way on both sides. Some people can be jealous, but I think those same people, once they get to know you, it changes. But if I'm facing my college teammate, which I have many times, if, you know, one of my college teammates are at the plate, I'm trying to punch him out, and I'm going to make him feel uncomfortable at the plate, and he's trying to hit one back off my kneecap. I know he is. So when we're golfing in the off season, he can brag about it.
Do they try to do that? They try to hit you?
Absolutely.
That's foul.
Hey, let me
play,
tell you,
man.
What, that ball, I turn it loose at 94, 95. I can't tell you how many balls that went by my earlobe sound like bacon in a frying pan at about 133 miles an hour. I got hit on the shin one time. And the scout told me, our scout had the speed gun on it, and he said, you threw it in at 94, it hit you at 122.
Jeez.
And I wanted to cry, but my molars hurt. I mean, they were like, I had a pulse in the back. I was like, oh, my God, that hurt.
What did you think when you saw Chapman throwing 104?
Yeah, well, he was represented by my agents, and we were going to have a talk and talk to him about what we were doing. And I said, you know, he was having trouble throwing strikes. And I said, you know, he was sitting, you know, throwing 104, 105.
Yeah.
I think at one point he got license plates on his vehicle that said 105. And I said, hey, if you back it down to like about 99 to 100.
Yeah, you throw a strike.
Throw a strike. It might help. But, guys, it doesn't matter. I can try and tell these guys now, especially how it is now with guys, starters may go 5, 6 innings. And then they turn it over to a bullpen. And your guys coming out of the bullpen, all of them are throwing 98 to 100. And they're power throwers, so if we can stretch those guys out, we may be able to get to them. But it really doesn't matter how hard you throw, because guys in the big leagues, they're good at the plate, man. They can put wood on a bullet, I'm telling you. These guys time you. They get your foot down, they can time you up, and you see where they're launching these balls now, this exit velocity and all this stuff.
What's the craziest thing you've ever seen on the diamond? Like, I saw back-to-back homers and then I saw a third one hit the wall, and I was like, no way. Literally three pitches. Yeah. What's the craziest thing you've ever seen on a diamond?
Oh, the craziest thing for me, I think I was like 25 years old, and I struck a couple guys out in Fenway, and I turned around, and my whole infield yelling mate turned back around, and that girl with the big breast came running out of the stands to get a kissing bandit. That's the craziest thing for sure that's happened to me. Nothing to be baseball related. What the best was when she jumped out of the stands and she came running at me, and she had like two stop signs going at, you know, and I'm like, oh my gosh. So she hugged me, and I think what I did was I pointed back because Tony Pena was my catcher, and Tony was just – he's fun-loving, and Tony's always up to something, you know. Tony loved it that we were intentionally walking a guy with his hand out, but I knew that he's going to sit back down, and I was going to throw a strike to strike the guy out. So the hitter thought we were going to walk him. It was like a 2-2 count or 3-2 count. We ended up throwing a strike, and he loved it. But so she runs out and gives me a hug and stuff, and I said, hey, before you get arrested, I want you to run back in there and lay one on my catcher, because Tony's in there with his mask up just right. laughing and smiling that this is happening. Fans are going crazy, and I said, go give my catcher, just lay one on him. Well, she thought that I said the umpire, so I think she uh-oh. Passed Tony and went and hugged and gave the umpire. I had the biggest strike zone the rest of the day.
Hey, is the pitcher-catcher relationship similar to a player-caddy? I mean, is that an insult, or is there something there that's similar?
I would say it's similar. Yeah, I think it is. You know, you have to be on. You know, again, the people that I would think for my career, so many teammates. It's not an individual thing at all. And definitely, I can't tell you how many great catchers I had that paid attention to detail. Because, like I said, I called a lot of my game from the mound just by looks. Why a foul ball's going off, or foul ball here, foul ball there.
Wait, you could see the way a foul ball goes off and change your spin?
No, it was by my looks. It was straight by my, I don't give away all my trades because I got some of the guys doing it, so it's easy to call a game that you'd be on, that so you're not shaking a guy off all the time. Most of the time I would shake off, it's because the catcher wanted me to shake to try and put another thought into the hitter's mind.
It's like a double negative.
That's it, exactly. So whoa. We would do, but my catchers, again, they had such great hands. There's just too many to name. All of them were really, really good. Like I said, I threw a heavy ball too. And when I threw my two seam fastball, man, it would really bury in there on those guys' thumbs, man. And
they got a padded mitt.
Yeah, they had a plastic thing in there too, like a mold, a piece of hard plastic mold that they molded around their thumb. That, you know, because you damage it there.
If you miss it, just about an inch.
Oh, it's such a deep bone bruise that really they couldn't even barely hold the bat to go hit.
Ooh.
So that would affect them at the plate when they were trying to hit, but. The guys that really had quiet hands and sat still, because, you know, back then, you got to understand a little tip for the viewers. Some of the umpires still do it, I think. You'll see a big league umpire sit down behind the catcher, and he'll put his hand on the catcher's back to sit down and squat, kind of a balance thing. You know, some of them don't touch the catcher, but some of them will gently lay their hand on the catcher's back. Well, then if the catcher, when he's doing it, if he just slides a little bit and it's a close pitch, he's going to feel that ball's outside. I might not get that call.
Oh, so it's more like this.
Yeah, so I want that catcher just to trust his hand, sit still with that hand here. Not windshield wipers, which some of these guys have. They got some windshield wipers. They can't hold the ball for
nothing. Because then they basically bring it back in, and that looks like a ball.
That's it. And they're taught to bring it back to their chest and bring it up. But if their body's fairly still and they're just trusting their hands, it makes it a world.
And trusting your pitch, too.
Yeah, and then everything looks, even when you do miss a little bit, a ball outside or whatever it is, it looks like a strike. You might even get a jump out of an umpire, like he's starting to call it a strike. Yeah.
Favorite ump?
Well, I had 220 strikeout games. Vic Valtaggio. Vic said that he had to ice his shoulder down after I struck out 20 because he was doing this the whole time. So he said he even had to ice down after the game. So there's some great umpires that had great character. I always loved the umpires that when we were having a disagreement on the strike zone, when they would come out and I'd get after them, they'd get back after me, you know, not take it personally or not throw you out.
Right, right.
Like
allow a little back and forth.
Yeah, we had one, Durwood was, you know, God rest his soul, he was awesome too, because I said, man, that was a good pitch. He'd come out. And I said, Durwood, that's a really good pitch. And he goes, it even sounded like a strike, Rocket. I said, well, then keep calling it. He goes, I didn't see it. He goes, I didn't see that, and you threw it pretty hard, but it sounded like a strike.
So you talked about score a lot, with your son, right?
Yeah.
And Cody and playing ball.
Yeah.
Is that golf for you? What's up with golf for you? Where are you at with it? You're a five. Where are you at with golf?
Yeah, I love golf. I've met far more business opportunities through the game of golf. That's what I do now with my foundation. I love doing the events with my foundation. Not that I don't like the banquets. I tease people. These banquets that you go to and you get the uncooked piece of steak and the cold piece of chicken, you buy an auction item that the time you get ready to go on it is expired, or, you know. So what we've done now is I do you can, you know, go to my foundation and see it. It's fun for me because I auction myself off for golf, whether it be in Houston where they come to Houston. And I play a round of golf. They all get some signs and swag bag and cool stuff. Sometimes I invite them to the house, let them go upstairs, take pictures with the Cy Youngs. Whoa. And then I put them in my buddy's suite for a game. And, you know, like, say, a couple months ago or last season towards the end, played the Cubbies. So the group that bought the package, this was actually a BP package. The second one's a batting practice experience. So whoa. I can either come and go to a college field or a high school field or whatever. I have an indoor and outdoor facility at my house at home in Houston. So what we do is we bring them in. They fly in from noon to one. If it's grown-ups, this group was from Chicago, so we planned it around when the Cubbies were playing the Astros, which was perfect for them. So they flew in. He brought 12 of his businessmen, so they were all crazy and ready to go. So if it's grown-ups, I feed them Mexican food and margaritas. I throw BP to them for an hour. And then they go up and take pictures with the Cy Youngs, and then they go to a suite and enjoy the game. It's a great package, and they go crazy. Had a couple guys do it three or four times. If the group, like they did one time, the guy brought his son's 15-year-old team. So he brought the whole team in. I did the same thing. I feed them Powerades and James Coney Island and keep it real there. And then we kind of do the same thing. The golf outings are great, 4 hours. We golf and mess around. I've gone to a couple guys where he said, listen, I'd rather – you come be my guest and my member guest. So I've done that too.
That's
so
cool.
It's just better than, you know, like I said, I don't mind the sit down events, but I'm kind of done with those. These little packages that we do now, which normally, and we'll probably do it again this year, the Red Sox auction me off. I still work with the Jimmy Fund, which is their big deal there at Fenway. And they auction me off in game. And this experience, you can't even, I mean, the donation is nothing. I mean, they pay a lot to do it, and they split it with my foundation along with the Jimmy Fund. I go to Fenway Park, stand on my own stomping ground mound where I got my nickname and made my name, and I throw an hour batting practice to this group at Fenway Park. They get to hit, and I tell them, I go up to the mound, I go, I let them hit a little bit because they're already nervous. And then I step up there and I go, you guys are standing right where Babe Ruth, you're standing right, you're taking BP at Fenway Park. One guy finally ran, I threw him a pie in there about 50 miles an hour, and he hit like the base of the wall at the Green Monster. I thought he was going to faint, and it just barely hit, I said, it looks closer on TV, doesn't it? Because he was trying like hell to get it up there. But he hit the base of the wall, and he went crazy. And then the Red Sox take him on an inside tour, feed him lunch, and then they bring them back for the ball game that night. So it's right. It's an unbelievable. I love it just for the fact that it's an experience that you're going to have as a fan or, like I said, your businessman's group, your whoever it might be. So love doing that. And it's golf, man. I love golf. I love being outdoor. I've gotten to see the best of the best courses, playing with some really cool people. Played my fastest round of golf up at Kenny Bunkport with President Bush, Senior Bush. 41. I think we played in 2 hours and 6 minutes. No practice swings. You drive right to the ball. He was president at the time. And the story holds true that, yeah, he was president, so we're giving him every three-footer. But then when he wasn't president, he went to pick it up and say, you got to putt that. That yeah.
Former president.
Yeah.
What, you got, the Scottish Open is held this year at a very
good
special
call.
Place for
yeah,
you.
I see you. Yeah. Scottish Open, we, along with Paul Savardi, Jerry Savardi, his brother has actually really taken this and ran with it for us over there. But we have a course called Renaissance. We got the property a number of years ago right next to Muirfield. And I knew I was going to like golf in Scotland. I still haven't been to Ireland. I want to get to Ireland, too, because I talked to some of the pros, and they've invited me over there. But
this is a good year to go.
It is a good year to go, right? So we got the Scottish Open. We were awarded the Scottish Open at Renaissance. The listeners, the viewers will see our golf course this summer on TV. And but, you know, Paul and all of them had a great vision over there, and the course is fantastic. We usually try and get over twice a year, member, guest. And those folks over there, the locals that are members, they are serious about their golf over there, man. So, and then of course DJ No Request had to show up. I said, listen, you got golf and you guys drink a lot over here. Right. So we're gonna add one more element. And they looked at me like the first 2 years, they're like, nah. But then I threw in a little Elton John and a little, you know what I'm saying, a little Michael.
You got to ease him in.
Yeah, got him a little Gordon Lightfoot. You know, I didn't have them all in my rotation, but now I got them in my rotation.
Do you do Spotify?
Yeah.
I got to get on your playlist.
Yeah. I don't do it, but I obviously pull stuff.
You don't make playlists on Spotify?
No. This is all K-Jams. This is like,
I got to get in on this when we're done.
So, I mean, I have to show. I got busted. They had somebody show up and said, did a little article on somebody was there watching me saying that the Rocket Man was doing it. They called it karaoke, but like I tell people, karaoke sucks. This is way, even if you're good at karaoke, I told you, Now, my little sister sang a little bit in a couple choirs. She's not allowed to go first because she's really good.
She's too good.
Yeah, she's got to sit for an hour.
Yeah.
No, she doesn't scare
you got to ice them a little bit.
Yeah, she can't scare everybody off. So. But, hey, it's a way to kill 3 hours. But we now, when DJ No Request shows up in Scotland, it's like, yeah, Rocket, what night we singing? I go, yeah. They won't go home either, man. Some of those guys, they'll stay there. They stay there a long time. They don't get it when I play closing time. And
yeah, it doesn't mean the same thing to them.
No, it doesn't.
Apparently, the meaning of closing time isn't about a bar.
No,
Did you hear that? I don't know what it is. It's something else.
Yeah, it's something else.
It's something weird.
Yeah.
I normally ask people when we finish up the pod to write a letter to golf, but I kind of think you should write a letter to baseball. Start it off. Dear baseball.
Dear baseball, thank you for letting me be the oldest living teenager. You know, I got to feel like a kid for 24 years, and it all started with a red glove that my mom, working her butt off for 3 jobs, got me with a sweet pair of cleats. And thank you for my brothers and sisters making sacrifices so little brother could do his thing. And but I think if you ask them, I gave it back to them threefold for them following me around the country and getting to watch me. And so that's what I would say, dear baseball. Thank you for all my wonderful teammates. A lot of these guys, you know, start trying to be an individual and beat their chest to how good they were, and I did this and I did that. You didn't do anything without all the great teammates you had. Yeah, I would be nothing. My teammate, Bruce Hurst, when I struck out 20, gave me my nickname, the Rocket, and you know, went from there. So, and dear baseball, thank you for letting me play for some of the coolest teams, that the, you know, 4 teams. I wanted to play my entire career in Boston, but it was a blessing that when they kind of the guy there ran us off and said it was going to be the twilight of my career or something. It was a long twilight, thank God. and thankful Mr. Steinbrenner came to Houston and said, you want to be a Yankee or don't you? Those years were fantastic. But four wonderful teams, too rich in tradition and history that you could ever have with the Red Sox and the Yankees. I had 2 wonderful years in Toronto when the owner there, Mr. Beeston, came down and asked me to get up there and play for the Blue Jays. Loved it. And then retired. And then unretired and got to play for my home team for 3 years at my advanced age, probably 3 of the better years I had pitching at the age I was at. So, that would be dear baseball. And what's cool is it's not a once upon a time. You hear all these other stories that are so out there that are so ridiculous. They start with once upon a time. This one started dear baseball.
There's not that many people who have retired and come back. There's only 2, right? Maybe 3?
Oh man, I don't know. That's a good question.
MJ.
I try. Yeah, he
you
did.
You and MJ,
it.
And then good
I did. Yeah, it's good company. I think Brett Favre did it more than I did.
Right,
didn't he?
That's right.
Favre.
That's great, Favre. And you guys each a different sport. So it's really cool, man. Yeah. I'm excited to spend some time with you.
This is awesome. I didn't know I was going to rock a podcast in the back of an SUV, but we did it.
It's good. It's a good spot. I mean, it's cozy. Yeah. It's quiet.
I'm going to have to remember this. I might have to do a little K-Jams DJ No Request.
I think
we sound good through here, like I said.
No, you've got a great voice. You're interesting and you're interested, so I really appreciate it, man. I look forward to hanging out with you again.
Appreciate it, baby.
Thank you.
Let's play some golf.
I love. You know, more I'm a 5'2".
Let's go, dog.
So we're going straight up.
Let's go.
I saw, Baumgartner? You know Brian Baumgartner?
Yeah.
So we go, he goes, well, we got to play for something. And I was like, all right. And I go, what do you want to play for? And he goes, whatever makes you uncomfortable. And I was like, that's different for you and me. But anyway, we figured it out. We actually pushed after 9 holes.
I like that. So when it rains like this, I was just teasing the other pros over there. When it rains like this, there's a bowling alley near. We do that too. I mean, but we don't care that we only bowl 130. But we play $100 strikes, $50 spares. That's all that matters. You're just trying to strike and spare, dog.
That's a big game right there. Uh-huh. I'm down.
If you play for $20 and you show up with only 10, the pressure's relative, right?
It's true. Right? It's all relative. So, yeah, man. I look forward to a game, dude.
Appreciate it. Let's do it.
Take care.